You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A new study led by the University of Otago has found that each year, firearms injuries are costing the New Zealand hospital system an average of $1.48 million and costing the country a further $321 million in years of life lost. The researchers investigated firearms-related hospitalizations and deaths from assaults, accidents, and suicide between the years 2000 and 2018. The total cost of hospital care over the 19 years was $28.2 million. Lead researcher Dr. Lucy Telfar-Barnard, a senior research fellow at the University of Otago, Wellington, says more than 1,000 people died and 2,115 people were hospitalized as a result of firearm incidents between 2000 and 2018. More than 80% of those hospitalized needed surgery, with most of the injuries from accidents. To talk about this study, I spoke to Dr. Lucy Telfar-Barnard.
Can you explain where this number comes from?
Sure. So there are two numbers there, and they're calculated in different ways. So the 1.48 million, that's reasonably straightforward. When someone goes to hospital, there is a figure that is calculated according to how serious that hospitalisation is, and also reflects how long the person is in hospital, and that's an amount that the government gives to the hospital in recognition of the time and effort and treatment and so on required for that person. So it's quite straightforward to pull that out of hospitalisation data and add it all up, and you get to a figure for a cost for any particular type of event. The years of life lost, we take how long someone might be expected to live in ordinary circumstances, and then we subtract the age at which they actually died, and then multiply that by a statistical value of a year of life, which comes via a formula from another value from NZTA, which is the value of a statistical life. So it's not a direct cost, it's a kind of a theoretical cost of the value of that we put on lives for cost-benefit purposes and health economics.
The study refers to the 1992 amendment to the Arms Act. Can you describe what this is and how it has impacted firearm incidents?
Yeah, sure. So in 1990, there was a mass shooting in Dunedin. And in 1992, there was an amendment to the Arms Act, which introduced a range of restrictions. So it got rid of lifetime licenses and introduced photo ID requirements for license holders. Introduced a fit and proper test for people who wanted to have a firearms license and a range of other things as well. So after that law change, we particularly saw deaths due to firearms come down over subsequent years. And most of those deaths are suicide deaths. And we can really see that reduction in firearm suicide in that period since then.
Most of the deaths were from suicide in the study as well, especially in rural areas. Can you talk about this and what steps can we take to solve this?
Right. So yes, I mean, you know, most of the deaths and most of the people who are affected by firearms injuries are people in rural areas, and that's not terribly surprising given that's where most of the firearms are for all of their practical uses. We would expect to see, though, you know, that reduction in suicides that we saw comes from all of the extra steps that are put in. So when someone is committing suicide by firearm, and I should add here, I'm not a suicide expert and so I'm a bit hesitant in speaking in this space. But basically the more steps that you can put between someone having this thought that maybe they're going to do something to themselves and them actually getting to the point where they can carry out that action, the more time they have to think better of that. And so all of those requirements around safe storage that came in and all of the things that accompanying that, like having ammunition stored separately from the firearm, keeping the keys somewhere else again, all of those things interrupt that chain from the person thinking I'm going to do this thing and the person actually being able to do it and give that person time to decide not to do it. So that's why we would expect to see that reduction. In recent years, we have started to see an increase in from assault with a firearm, so homicide, firearms, homicide. So we can see that although those suicide rates have come down, there's still room to improve them further, you know, to reduce harm further. And also there is additional regulation still required to address the rising level of firearms homicide.
The study found that Māori had a threefold higher risk than Europeans of being victims of firearm homicides. Can you explain why?
No. The short answer to that. I mean, you know, we didn't set out in the study to explain the reasons for any higher risk in any particular group. Because this was very much an exploratory study, this kind of research hasn't been done in a comprehensive way in New Zealand before. So at this stage, we're just describing what the situation was. There would need to be further research done to look into why some groups are more at risk than others. Obviously, for some of those risks, we can see, well, there's obviously a reason, you know, and there's the explanation. So for the rural difference, that is because that's where the firearms are. But for Māori and Pacific, more likely to be victims of crime in general, so that probably is part of it. But more broadly as to why they're more commonly victims of firearms assault, I wouldn't be able to comment based on any of this.
Are there any plans to do a study to explain why in the future?
I'm not aware of any. I should note that the studies I did unfunded because funding for health research is not straightforward, so it would mean that someone would need to put in an application to do that. You're a student radio station. I am open to supervising students who might want to look at that at master's or PhD level. I'd be really interested to hear from them. I don't see anyone with that in mind currently.
Moving back to the overall numbers, what can the government do right now to improve these, and what is something we can look at more long-term to improve the situation?
Again, I'd probably defer to people with a stronger background in firearm harm prevention, but on a kind of a broad basis, the key thing is that this is not the time to be loosening our firearms regulation. We need to maintain the impetus to keep those numbers down. One of the things that we do talk about is improved targeted education, because we can see, particularly given that there are higher injury rates in children and young people, that there's potentially some issues there around supervision and education, and so we'd like to see some more effort go into that space. And then the other thing that would be really useful is that right now we don't have information on who owns the firearms that are involved in these events. We know who's been injured or killed, but we don't know who owned the firearm that shot them. And it would be really helpful if that information was routinely collected when someone is injured or killed with a firearm. There are kind of bits of information, but they're haphazard and they're not all together in one place. And having that regular information collection would help identify other ways that we could intervene to prevent further firearms harm.
And that was Senior Research Fellow Dr. Lucy Telfer-Barnard on the University of Otago study that found that firearm incidents were costing New Zealand $322 million per year.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.